This video reports news and research provided in the public interest. It gratefully thanks contributors and claims fair use where any portions of video or copyright images are used. Declaration of interest. Neither the producers nor any family members have any interest, including pecuniary or political, in the parties referred to in this video. The following is a presentation of facts. The facts shown in this video are just that. Facts. This video does not suggest motive nor claim any malfeasance or criminal act. The facts remain for you to know and decide how you are affected. Fact. Around the world, once relatively free communities are seeing their freedoms disappearing. For example, Australia. Once viewed as a country valuing freedom of speech, it now presents an image as the land down under the jackboot, with brutal treatment of citizens by those sworn to keep the peace.
We've got history to warn us about these things, and we are literally living a moment in time in history where we shouldn't need to have anybody reflect on this in years to come and go, oh, I should have acted differently. You should know better right now. Every single one of us should know better right now that this is wrong, and the way that we are responding to this pandemic, it's not proportionate in this country. It's not proportionate in this state. And you shouldn't need years to reflect on that to then come around and go, oh yeah, we could have responded to that better.
Voicing opinions that challenge empowered institutions has grown more dangerous since early 2020. Orders to undergo an experimental medical procedure has caused demonstrations of disapproval. Martial law or lockdowns have replaced normal freedoms. Many believe peaceful protest is justified if government infringes such laws, so what claim do authorities make to justify such dramatic enforcement of the restrictions? 1. Federal and state governments in 2020 announced a new highly communicable deadly coronavirus exists in the country. Depending on the source, it may be as dangerous to the individual as a seasonal flu, or it could be as deadly as the worst plague imagined. 2. On the basis of the PCR test alleged case numbers of those with the virus COVID-19, a state of emergency status has been declared to enable states to decree emergency action. 3. Numerous preventative treatments and therapies for COVID-19, proven successful in situ and through large case studies, have been advised by leading medical groups of specialists from around the world. As prophylactic or early treatment protocols, they've had remarkable success. Amongst them, a Nobel Prize-winning therapeutic on the WHO list of essential drugs, proposed with supporting evidence by a research team from Melbourne University. However, their advice has been rejected, and the medicine subjected to false and misleading criticism by the very public officials tasked with acting in the public interest. The mainstream media, too, has fanned the fear. This approach is opposite to historical evidence where governments genuinely sought to calm their populations and provide treatment in the face of an actual threat to public health. What? 4. Instead, a single experimental product, never used on human population, has been endorsed and enforced by government Australia-wide, namely, a controversial invasive procedure using a poison inoculation. This being in spite of the available alternatives and in the face of the growing evidence warning of adverse reactions including death following such inoculations. Again the question, what? 5. This intense advocacy of a single product not only raises questions on health grounds, but as a manufactured product, may arguably be subject to Australian fair trading laws where prevention of competition is illegal. And if a health emergency is declared, what is more important, the patient or the patent? So, who are the people asserting this narrow solution to an alleged threat? Why are they delegated with such authority, considering the associations that exist between many of them and their multi-billion-dollar conflicts of interest that would test the strongest of integrities? The network is made up of governments and their departments, regulatory bodies almost totally funded by the product manufacturers they're supposed to regulate, academics providing advice to government and receiving direct grants or via their universities, media groups, new technologies, ostensibly charitable foundations, international bodies strongly directed by foreign actors, global corporations, foreign ideologically based organizations, and the highest paying corporate criminals on the planet. None of these relationships in themselves prove they affect decisions made by those in public office. However, as many Australians believe the only way to regain lost freedoms is to comply with those dictating the public inoculation campaign, it's worth looking at those responsible. Especially as some of these people refuse to discuss the options offered by experienced vaccine developers, immunologists, and molecular biologists, but instead put their faith in only those campaigning for these experimental procedures.
I would hope you wouldn't say to the public that if something goes wrong, you're stuffed, Senator. That would not be good
for... Well, that's the truth, Mr. Murphy.
That's just the way it is. We've got to accept that this is the new world order.
This is Australia. Two territories, six states, each with a government but none have higher authority than the federal government, located in Canberra, Australian Capital Territory. So let's start here. Fact 1. Back in November 1940, the recently appointed Director General of Information for Australian Government, Sir Keith Murdoch, an influential Australian media owner himself, resigned his post after comparisons were made with Nazi propagandist Goebbels. The press withdrew cooperation and politicians had protested. By then, his son Rupert Murdoch was 9 years old. Rupert Murdoch extended his father's media success and amassed one of the world's largest media conglomerates with massive investment also in pharmaceuticals, including GlaxoSmithKline. 2. At the same time, a Swiss-born son of a German engineer named Eugen Schwab was managing Escherwiss factory in Ravensburg, renowned for horrific Nazi crimes against humanity. An efficient manager, he used forced labor to supply German forces, and his branch was awarded National Socialist Model Company by his Nazi patrons. Nuclear weapons was one of the company's interests, and his son Klaus, born in 1938, carried this on, becoming a well-positioned technocrat with involvement in South Africa's illegal nuclear acquisitions. In 1970, Klaus Schwab received assistance from the European Commission and, strongly supported by the Club of Rome, set up what was to become the World Economic Forum. Klaus Schwab, a keen advocate of technology power, is connected to Australian government decision-makers, and in this interview in 2016, he reveals when humans can expect to be implanted with microchips.
Certainement dans les 10 années à venir. Et après, on pourrait s'imaginer qu'on les implante dans nos cerveaux ou dans notre peau. Et à la fin, peut-être il y a une communication directe entre notre cerveau et le monde digital.
3. In 1955 in the U.S., a son was born to lawyer William Gates and the granddaughter of Seattle's National City Bank founder, Mary. His name, William Henry Gates. He inherited a fortune then through family connections with the CEO of IBM, increased that fortune through Microsoft before making an even bigger fortune in vaccines.
My dad was head of Planned Parenthood, and it was very controversial.
As one who subscribes to his parents' views on population control.
The world today has 6.8 billion people. That's headed up to about 9 billion. We could lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%.
Then, along with his partners, and being a beneficiary of the financing and delivery of global health products, makes Australian decision-makers' relationships with Bill Gates a matter of interest in this list of facts. So, now, let's look at some connections from Canberra. The Prime Minister is Scott Morrison, who, according to former Prime Ministers Rudd and Turnbull, is protected in the media by Rupert Murdoch as long as he acts in Murdoch's interests. Mr. Morrison's brother Alan is co-deputy chair Paramedicine Accreditation Committee with Australia Health Practitioner Regulation Agency, the national organization responsible for implementing the national registration and accreditation scheme across Australia, and who have directed physicians across Australia to promote mRNA inoculation and reject ivermectin. Morrison's Minister for Health is Greg Hunt, former Director of Strategy for WEF Klaus Schwab, the man who wants everyone microchipped. Greg Hunt has embraced billionaire Andrew Forrest, graphite miner, in a partnership with China. Graphene, derived from graphite, is a superconductor used in technology, affects human biology, and has allegedly been discovered in some people injected with these experimental inoculations. Andrew Forrest, through his foundation, he is also joined with Bill and Melinda Gates, Wellcome, and other global partners to exchange data. He's seen here with Greg Hunt and the Chinese consul in Australia representing Beijing Genomics Institute, BGI.
So I am absolutely delighted today to announce a groundbreaking and fundamental partnership for Australia between the Australian government and Mindaroo and the pathology sector.
And this was a business-to-business relationship where capital was required immediately, deployed immediately, and over time be repaid by the Commonwealth.
With the joint efforts of Mindoor Foundation and BGI, this is yet another major step forward between China and Australia.
BGI is now one of the world's largest genomics companies specializing in amassing gene data. This is the gene bank that the Australian government, through Greg Hunt, has now installed as a partner. United States authorities, however, viewed BGI as a major risk and refused their request to operate in a number of states.
John Wertheim talked to career intelligence official Bill Evanina and supervisory special agent Edward Yu about how China is trying to collect Americans' medical data and why this may pose a threat to national security.
80% of American adults have had all their personally identifiable information stolen by the Communist Party of China.
China's been very upfront. They want to dominate biotech by 2025, the global sphere, $4 trillion industry. If you have a huge DNA library, if you have all this data, that's incredibly valuable. The other threat is a national security threat. Talking to the national intelligence officials we spoke with, they feel like this is an imminent threat, yes. Your DNA is very valuable.
That data becomes incredibly relevant and very, very valuable. Data is absolutely going to be the new oil.
We are going to sequence every living thing on Earth. We are going to sequence everybody in the world.
In Australia, the Prime Minister's appointed key advisor on vaccine solutions is his National COVID-19 Coordination Commissioner, who is not a medical doctor, but a bureaucrat named Jane Halton. English-born Ms. Halton is or has been chairperson on the executive board of the Bill Gates-backed WHO. The chair of Gates-backed CEPI, the Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness Innovations, which is also funded by Navavax, the company whose product has been given trialing permission in Australia. Director of French Naval Group Company involving Australian submarine contracts. Director of Crown Resorts with hotels used in quarantine schemes. Chair of Quarantine Hotel Fiasco Review involving Crown Hotels. Promoter of COVAX Facility and Alliance of Garvey, co-founded by Bill Gates, the Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness Innovations, CEPI, and WHO to accelerate development and manufacture of COVID-19 vaccines. Halton is the bureaucrat who pushed the no-jab, no-play policy in May 2020 to deny access to all public social programs for those refusing experimental inoculation. In October 2019, she participated in the Event 201, a simulation of a global coronavirus pandemic a couple of months before most of the world knew it existed.
It is almost unheard of that people are producing product without having a forward commitment for the consumption of that product. So the first thing that needs to be done, because this is not something that the countries currently control, unless countries are going to bring about emergency situations and co-opt an existing supply chain.
Ms. Halton is or has been director of United States-based Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation, IHME, where her husband Trevor Sutton is or was also associated in data management. Trevor Sutton, Deputy Chief of Australian Bureau of Statistics, leads the Statistical Business Transformation Group, running a $256 million program to transform the way the Bureau collects, processes, analyzes, and disseminates information and related statistics. Trevor Sutton is the brother of Brett Sutton, associate of the Burnett Institute funded by Bill Gates, and health advisor to the Victorian State Premier Daniel Andrews, who has pushed to gain power to declare ongoing states of emergency, including lockdowns, and wants inoculation to be mandatory. In Queensland, the state premier is Anastasia Palaszczuk, who took over the political office of her father Heinrich, or Henry Palaszczuk. German-born Heinrich is now chairman of the Gene Technology Alliance, GTA, a DNA storage company with close ties to China, where he's known as Henry Bielecki. Palaszczuk's business interests, including GTA, may trade under different names, depending on where they operate. Premier Palaszczuk's chief health officer is Jeanette Young, whose husband Graham Nimmo is director of Queensland Pathology, and who serve on an advisory board for Pfizer. His laboratory in Hurst in Queensland is just a building away from BGI, Beijing Genomics Institute. The former New South Wales Premier Gladys Berejiklian resigned on October 1 subject to corruption charges and, according to other political parties, was being manipulated by pharmaceutical companies to push inoculations.
She's being directed by a lobbyist in Sydney who's being paid by AstraZeneca and by Pfizer tens of millions of dollars to get these policies through to make sure the vaccine is pushed. That's why. You asked the question, I gave you the answer. And that's my personal knowledge. And I'm happy to make a statement here to police or to anyone if they want to know what's going on.
Gladys Berejiklian's former partner and fellow politician, Daryl Maguire, also resigned following corruption charges. The state's chief health officer is Kerry Chant.
We will be looking at what contact tracing looks like in the new world order.
New South Wales Premier is now Dominic Perrottet, whose father John is a senior technical specialist at the World Bank in Washington, D.C., USA. And just a handful of political decision-makers from Australia's federal and three of its state governments, along with the bureaucrats they empower, we see a web involving relatives and relationships that in the very least demand examination, especially if impinging on national health. When a single solution to a health hazard generates billions for some involved and requires academics be presented as neutral experts to the public, then the relationships between them warrant scrutiny. Why? Because many academics and alleged experts who appear authoritative and promote the narrative also benefit through sponsorships, incentives, and remuneration from the very manufacturers of that product. Whereas, across the globe, hundreds of other highly accredited specialists in every field of medicine, law, and science have been censored, their data rejected, and their reputations and careers destroyed outright by authorities, media, and manufacturers of mRNA experimental inoculations. Having opened a small window into the machinations of mRNA and the Australian government, its bureaucrats, and associated academia, we have three immediate choices to make. 1. Do I choose to continue to place unconditional faith in those with obvious links to vested financial interests when my very life is at stake? 2. Do I choose to ignore the warnings of the world's greatest medical specialists in fields involving vaccination when they are risking their lives and careers to do so? 3. Do I, as an Australian, choose more dangerous experimental inoculations or demand access to proven medical protocol options for my protection or treatment that are both successful and inexpensive? Denying patients rights to choose is an unlawful act and, in the case of any public servant or practitioner, invites a charge of malfeasance. If we still have a choice, choose wisely.
The year that has really changed the world. It is thanks to technology that we are able to join the cyber polygon entirely remotely. For the first time, actually, since World War II, the coronavirus pandemic marks a fundamental inflection point in our global course.
This is a Dorothy Joyner production.